You're listening to an Irreverent Podcast.
For more unholy content from our friends, head to irreverent.fm.
Hey friends, welcome to the Speaking in Church Podcast, and today we have a very special treat. My friend...
Special.
Kevin Garcia is here to talk about their new book.
Hi, every human. We're so glad to be here.
I'm so excited. So Kevin and I are real life friends, which is very cute.
Yeah, I think so. I always think it's fun to, I don't know, because this is just us hanging out.
I know.
which I know. Is nice.
And we don't get to do it very often because we're both...
busy humans on opposite coasts, like trying, you know, you've got a community that you're in a job, and I've got a community and a job, and capitalism keeping us apart.
I don't even get me started.
Oh, maybe I do. Maybe I do want to get you started.
Well, I'm sure it'll come up because we're the most leftist bitches in the world.
Very that.
But let's chat about your book. Tell the folks all about it.
The elevator pitch version of it is the book coming out in as of today, 41 days from today, which today is November 29th. So by the time this comes out, it'll be 40 days or shorter. But the book is called What Makes You Bloom: Cultivating a Practice for Connecting with Your Divine Self. And when I say divine self, I mean the aspect of every single human that is love, that is God herself, that is the creative spark, that is Ruach, that is the breath of life, that is the Christ, that is your highest self, that, you know, the endless names of God. That's who I believe we are at our core. When I say belief, I mean, that's the thought I hold at the very center of myself. And the entire book is about helping us remove the blocks to the awareness of that love, because at least from where I'm sitting and in my experience, the thing that we've been trying to get in touch with the whole time, and by that I mean like since we were, well, speak for myself, I grew up very, very evangelical. I was very devout and pious, and I had this connection to spirituality and to God, and I felt something even in those imperfect and sometimes harmful spaces. And then when I left that, it's like I didn't know what to do because I'd lost all my practices. And so this book is the what the fuck do I do now? You know, when I've pulled apart all of my practices, when I've let go of the faith, when I don't even, you know, when I'm afraid of God, but I don't think that God exists, and then maybe I'm scared of going to hell, even though I'm sure that it doesn't exist either. It really is about like, how do we undo those fears? That last little bit of fear that's keeping us between, the last little fear that's keeping a not even a real space, but a perceived space between ourselves and the divine, ourselves and the rest of the universe, ourselves and the beloved community that we claim to want to be a part of. And so over the course of the different chapters in the book, I am talking about different spiritual practices that lead to yielding different fruits of the spirit. And I do talk about every single chapter. I'm just like, you want to get self-control? First of all, self-control has nothing to do with deprivation. It has everything to do with only doing what you want, only without any sort of influence or any sort of like duress. What is it to do what you want and be in control of that? What is it to react how you want or respond how you want, rather than always like blowing up at every single trigger? And how do we get to that point? Through gentleness. And gentleness we get to because we rest, because we chill. You know, we want to be faithful to something. It's just like, you got to recognize what is it that it's even giving me to? What is faithfulness? It's not loyalty. It's not, you know, blind loyalty to something. It's, you know, dedication and devotion to something because of what it gives us. And so I'm flipping a lot of concepts on their head in this book, and kind of like giving a nice cross section of, I think, practical Christian theology with applied yogic philosophy.
That's a fancy
way of saying it.
Oh my gosh, I'm obsessed. Mostly because my parents still believe that yoga opens up your mind.
Someone just told me on TikTok.
I just saw your TikTok.
That's really crazy to me. I'm just like, and like, you know, that's, I'm not heavy in yogic ideals, but just like, if you are somebody who's, you know, studied or read anything, you're going to see like the, you know, the Sutras of Patanjali all mm-hmm. over the place. You're going to see the Gita. Mm-hmm. You, I even actually quote a story that, what is it? Satchidananda retells in his commentary. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool because it's like, there's all this fucking wisdom that I don't have to be afraid of and that can be a gift to me now.
Yep.
It's so good.
I know. This is actually so funny. Ryan and I just came back from Mormon country, Salt Lake City, visiting for Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And we just kept talking about how people don't leave the Mormon faith specifically because of what they fear. Mm-hmm. And the Mormons are so, I mean, I feel like in evangelical Christianity, they tell you, oh, when you go to heaven, you don't have a family. You're just like all mm-hmm. chilling together. But in Mormon faith, you get your family and mm-hmm. they like are very adamant about saying, if you are not Mormon, you will not be with your family. And that fear is so instilled in so many people that they mm-hmm. cannot feel like they can leave.
Mm-hmm. Because what if?
Yes. And I mean, I don't really hold those ideas, because what I appreciate about our friendship is that we're very, very similar.
Yeah.
2-8s going crazy.
Going crazy, and also like not like really just being clear about examining. I'm like, okay, what does that belief do for me? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like one of the questions that was given to me early on, like before I'd even come out, like someone said, Kevin, what good is heaven later if you're in hell now?
Ooh.
Like it's like you're putting yourself through hell. Mm-hmm. And she was actually my best friend in high school. She said, your morals will tear you apart. And I don't think that's what morals are supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
That was 16 years old, baby. I still remember that.
I know. I just, I'm so excited for this book because I do feel like it is mm-hmm. like so necessary. Because I feel like people like us who are more bitchy, for lack of a better word.
Yes. Like, a little bit bitchy, a little bit more not love and light girls.
Yes.
Not the feelies, some of the feelies, mm-hmm. but not like, I don't consider myself mushy.
Yeah.
You know?
Hell no. No.
Except for Christmas time.
Well,
that's different.
Yeah. I just think it's great for people who don't have that natural reaction to leaving religion or finding out what you want to believe for your own life, because it's scary, right? Like some of us aren't that scared because we're just assholes, mm-hmm. but it's beautiful for other people who need it.
Yeah. I think that is a gift that like, I think our personalities bring to it. I think also just like the more intersectional your marginalized identity is, the easier it is to be less afraid of something, because like you've already been through so much terrible shit already. Mm-hmm. It's like, what more could they do to me? Then we read in the scriptures, it says, do not fear the one who can destroy the body, but destroy the soul. And I'm like, that's actually more scary to me. Yeah. And like by destroying the soul, I look at that, I'm just like, whiteness, white supremacy, transphobia, queerphobia, the things that like, you know, hold our families captive.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, I don't really, you know, my body, sure, I got to deal with all that sort of stuff, but just like, I'm free, like in here, mm-hmm. like, that's what I think people are like, what we used to think we had in church. Yeah,
for
when
real.
We used to, you know, you're free in Christ. You can, but don't do that. Or you're out. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, said that that's God's best for us. Yeah. This is God's best for you. I'm just like, who decided that?
Yeah.
Certainly not God.
Certainly.
Yeah. But I'm excited for this book too, because I think for people, whether you are somebody who is like super jaded and you're just like, I don't believe anything spiritual, I don't believe, you know, or you are somebody who maybe believes in something spiritual, maybe you think love is real or the universe is real, etc., or that there's an underlying force mm-hmm. of love or well-being that's, you know, coursing towards all of us.
Yeah.
Maybe you believe that God is merely change. That's one of my favorite, mm-hmm. you know, earth seed from Octavia Butler's Parable of the Sower. This idea that God is like, the reason the world persists is because God is change.
Yeah.
And you can either learn to ride the waves of change, and then through learning to ride the waves, learn to shape God. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to be taken, you know, get caught up in the same patterns you always do.
Yeah.
This book, I think, offers a really practical way to approach spirituality in a way that doesn't, I'm not really a fluffy person, but I will say, I'm just like, you'll finally get in touch with your good feelings again. You'll finally, that's the thing is, like, I say that I'm not mushy, but what I mean is, like, this isn't just empty air. Mm-hmm. That I'm not just blowing hot air up people's, you know, skirts or faces or whatever, like up their asses or whatever the saying is. But what I'm hoping to provide, I'm just like, this is a meal. Sit down, enjoy it, digest it, taste it. And if you don't like the recipe, tweak it.
Yep. Yep.
And then, like, because there is life beyond losing everything. Mm-hmm. There is joy to be had. And also, like, what would it be like for you not to always be thinking about the things that almost killed you?
Ugh.
You know? What if you had anything else on your mind?
Yeah. It's funny. Ryan and I had a little tiff last night because we were having a conversation where I had this meeting with, like, my pastor and another friend from church. And I mean, we were just at a brewery talking about how to be a gayer church, essentially, what the conversation was. And I remember walking in and having this weird, like, when I get miracles or when I don't hear the voice of God, I just have certainty. That's how God speaks.
Clarity,
to me.
Yes.
Yes. And I remember walking in and seeing my pastor, and we're having this moment, and I'm just like, I'm so upset because I feel this tug towards being a spiritual leader, and I don't want that. Like, my friends call me the reluctant leader because I'm like,
you and me both.
We're all, I don't want to be in charge.
It's like, sorry, let me, you finish your story first before I jump into my thought.
Okay. Well, basically, I was trying to explain this to Ryan, and he was not getting it. He's a five, so he's very analytical. And I think leaving Mormonism because he was a smart kid kind of jaded him to some of the deeper spiritual universalities that I still feel as an ex-Pentecostal.
Yes, yes, yes. Same.
And I was trying to explain to him, and he was like, I was like, I just feel like things are going to change, and I'm warning you. And he didn't like that. He's like, why are you warning me? And I was like, because the world, my life might change. And he's like, well, what are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. What do you mean? And he was not understanding, like, this sense of things have shifted in my universe, and I just want you to know. And he's like, I feel like you're threatening me. And he's like, I'm not threatening you.
No, not
so funny.
No, it's like, and I think that's where a lot of people in their deconstruction, they get stuck, is in that first little, my world is falling apart, and you think this is the end. But it's like, once you, like, unmoor yourself, you know, let, you know, you, I was, who was I talking to the other day? I said, like, it's like that scene in Castaway. You built yourself a thing, you got off the island by hook or by crook, you know, the tides came in finally, and you went, and then on the way you lost Wilson. You know, and everyone's like, Wilson, I love you so much. It's like, Wilson's a volleyball.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with your faith. You think it's everything. That was your friend. That was your companion. You also said another way. So a lot of people, they lose white Jesus.
Oh.
But they're not used to, like, not having such a personal, you know, your personal Lord and Savior is gone, if you will. And one who is more concerned about collective liberation and healing comes in. But you can't see that because you're just staring at Wilson. But, like, so many people get stuck there, and then after you float a while, you realize it's not so bad out there.
Yeah.
And unlike Castaway, like, you don't, like, you, we're not going to doubt here on the ocean of God, you know? But, like, I remember, like, that floating feeling of, that used to be very scared. Just like, I feel like something is shifting. I feel like there's something moving within me. I can tell that the seasons are changing for me. And either looking at that with, like, great expectation of, like, all right, thy will be done. Or I need everything to stay the same. I'm holding on for dear life. And then I forget that God is change.
Yeah. Ryan does not grasp that. I mean, God bless him. I mean, he's a scientist. He's the best partner I could ever ask for. but
that's one place where you don't quite line up.
Yeah, and he's very much like, I don't like it when you dream because then I gotta do shit. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, he doesn't, mostly around housing. He's like, oh, well, you dream of a bigger house, and then all of a sudden I have to get to a bigger house. And I was like, yeah, bitch, what do you think this is? Like, if we're growing, we're growing.
It's like, I have to get, it's like, you don't have to do anything. I'm letting you know what I'm desiring, wanting, bringing into my life. I'm not actually telling you what you have to do.
Yeah.
How you react, that's your business. And I want it to stay your business.
Yeah.
But also, like there's a something A Course in Miracles says, like, one of the lessons is there is nothing to fear. And I think that's where, like, people are walking around afraid of God.
Yeah.
People are walking around afraid of that. Said another way, people are walking around afraid to connect with the deepest part of themselves, because to get there, you got to deal with all the emotions you didn't deal with.
Yeah.
You know,
oh my
God, that's the price of waking up, is you have to work out your karmas that you haven't dealt with yet. Got to undo those knots.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of that recently, especially I recently went out of contact with my mother because she used like my grief as a torture to stab me and twisted the knife. And so I was
too
like,
much.
I'm good. You've never apologized for anything. And I am not going to keep waiting around for this apology. And I'm not going to put you in the position to keep hurting me, because I'm going to honor you in that way.
Yes.
Father and mother.
And listen, people who, like, I didn't officially go no contact with my dad, but I just stopped calling. And I said, he'll call when he's ready. And he never did. And that was the thing. I was like, I got it. Like, I can love you from right over here. You can do whatever you want. You do not have to change for me to be happy.
Yeah.
But I am going to be happy.
Yeah. People actually, I'm curious what your thoughts are on this, because people always tell me, especially around the holidays, like, oh, you're going to regret not talking to your mom if she dies. And I'm like, I don't think so. Not to be a bitch, but
I mean, maybe this comes from our bitchy nature. There's a part of me that's very tempted. And there's even, like, you know, I will say it's less than 1% regret. The rest of it's like, no.
Yeah.
But, like, it was, like, it was at the very beginning when he first died. My father, so we wouldn't know, like, we didn't talk to each other. 3 years later, he got diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, died very quickly after that. And he did not call me to tell me that he was diagnosed. His second wife called his ex-wife, my mother, and my mother called my boyfriend, who told me to call my mom.
Oh my God.
This could have been solved with one phone call. And even when it got worse, even when he went to hospice care, he didn't call me. And so people said, you regret? I'm like, no, not for 1 second, because what did I do? I protected my peace. And like, does it, like, and, you know, do I have some on things I can never get answered, questions I can't ask him, etc. On, you know, in the physical, sure. But also, like, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I don't regret it.
It's
like,
know, for real.
I'm sitting here saying, it's like, I feel like it's like there's an interesting thing. I'm just like, I should feel bad. And I'm just like, no, I shouldn't. Not until I do. And if I do, great. And if I don't, also great. But right now, the feeling I had was I cried. I had a really, really hard time with it. It was really strange to, like, not be able to direct my anger towards a body anymore. And I had, it's a different kind of grieving. But as far as holding my boundary, I would do it again in a heartbeat.
And I feel like people forget that piece. Like, I'm going to grieve my mother if she were to die and we never spoke
again.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, I'm going to be upset and sad, but mostly I'm going to be grieving the relationship I never had. And it's a little simpler with my mom, because I feel like, I mean, I have diagnosed her in my head with narcissistic personality disorder. So everything she does is so predictable to me, because it's just like the textbook. Blah,
I'm just
blah,
like,
blah,
there
blah.
You go. I see your scripts, mom.
Yeah. And it's. And I gave her a lot of grace because I knew that she was a narcissist. But then after a while, I'm just like, I can't keep torturing myself. I can't.
Bingo. Like, that's, I think, the part of, there's a line from A Course, The Course in Miracles, which I'm always going to be quoting. It says, you who believe that love and sacrifice are one must learn that love has nothing to do with sacrifice. For just as sacrifice brings guilt, so love brings peace. Just as guilt is the condition for sacrifice, so peace is the prerequisite for your awareness with your relationship with God. Mm-hmm. Because like love and sacrifice going together, like thinking that we've got to earn it, thinking we've got to like do something, thinking that I have to torture myself to be with this family, to be with this church, to be with this person, to be with this organization, to be in this job. I think I've got to be miserable, or I think my miserable feelings are tolerable. You know, I'm going to tolerate it because it could be worse. Also, let me tell you something. It could be better.
It could be a lot better. And it is a lot better.
Yes. Oh my God. I'm just like the recognition that you do not have to be suffering all the time. For what?
Yep.
You know, that you should be like, I think it's so weird that like long suffering became such a Christian virtue. And I don't think it's a Christian virtue as much as it is a capitalistic idea.
Amen.
That they peddled to us poor folk and middle class folk to think if you just hold on long enough, you're going to be rich. You're going to get the raise. And then you're going to, and then. But just like, you know, LOL.
Us millennials are just the victims of all of this societal incompetence. Like,
it's so annoying because just like we grew up and like we did college and we got our master's and they did all the things. We did it right. We did it right.
Yep.
Quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And then and that's the thing with all the that's a microcosm of the rest of our stuff. God, I did it right. You know, I went to church. I stayed a virgin until I was married. I served the church and I'm still miserable.
Yeah.
And it's like, correct. Because if you play stupid games, get stupid prizes.
This
play,
is so funny.
You know what I'm saying?
Because I feel like if you ask my parents, I have done everything wrong in my life. And I am beyond happy. Like, I am beyond joy.
That's funny to me because just like knowing what I know about your past until you pulled apart your stuff. You were like good Christian girl, right?
Always
questioning, but still a good Christian girl.
Oh yeah. Like I left my parents' Pentecostal church like as a young teenager, 13, 14, because I was like, why is this pastor? One, no, he's not accountable to anything, anybody. There's no leadership board. And he lives in a mansion and the rest of us are sitting in this hood ass church struggling. And
you saw that as a teen.
Yeah, like this is not uncomfortable for anybody else. Like he has a movie theater in his fucking house. And
oh my gosh, this is also something wild. When I was a missionary or like working for the missions organization I went to the farewell thing for the interns, even though like it was very clear that I was getting fired / kicked out or like shunned. But, like it was like a very just quiet, oh, Kevin's gay now. Let's just not talk about it. But we went to like one of like the big donors who lived in the area, giant pool. I'm talking like multiple things. Like have you ever seen an in-ground trampoline? They have.
Yes.
And also it sounds feels very dangerous to me.
That, yeah.
But anyways, trampolines in general, I think should be outlawed.
Trampoline parks? Oh, yeah.
Insanity. Mm-hmm. You got to sign waivers. Mm-hmm. Anything I got to, anyways. But like I was just sitting there at the end of it, knowing that where I was about to go, because I was, first of all, support raising to live in a house with nine other guys in a 3-bedroom, 1-bath house.
Mm-mm. 1 bathroom?
Yes, between nine. And yes, it was as bad as you think it was.
Oh no.
To go, you know, work 8 hours a week and, you know, do these internship things for an organization that put me further into debt. Mm. And then I was thinking at this thing, I'm like, I'm about to go live in a shitty ass basement apartment with I'm stealing the mattress that they gave me. It was a futon thin piece of nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I slept on. Oh, and it was, I'm like, but you over here up in Gainesville, Georgia, have all this for you and your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Not like your kids don't live with you. Your grandkids don't live with you. Nobody like, what in God's name?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why is it that our interns are in debt?
Yeah.
But what would I know? I'm just a fag who wanted to be a missionary.
Amen. Oh my God.
I just really wish that they would have called me a fag and put me out. That would have been much nicer to me.
Just say the truer quiet part out loud. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I want that. I want like this is a very Enneagram 8 slash maybe a very faggot thing to say. But I was like, I want them to say it. I want people to say it.
Yeah.
Because it's just like go ahead and say it. Mm-hmm. See what's going to happen. I would love to know how it feels on your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I think is so interesting about so many like folks who are uncomfortable with queerness is like that they want to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like they want to say the N-word, just like they want to, you know,
mm-hmm.
call my daddy a wetback. I'm just like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Layers, mm-hmm. layers. But all this say, like dealing with, dealing with family is, not dealing with family. They become like in some ways like the greatest teachers of just like in some ways like, I really do think that creating healthy boundaries is a way to love them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is, and I really do think when it says honor thy father and mother, I think the best way we can do that, like you said, is like, if I can't be in your presence without raising my voice, if I can't be in your presence without becoming small and lying to you,
mm-hmm.
that's not honor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, I cannot allow you to abuse me because I know only what you do to me is also what you're doing to yourself. So in good conscience, I can't allow you
mm-hmm.
to hurt yourself anymore. Take me out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just like, so it's.
But I'm the bitch.
Yeah. I'm just like, you're the one who's like done like, this is like, you've done repeated not nice things to me and I don't mm-hmm. feel good when I'm around you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just like, what would you do if, you know. Someone was feeling, if you felt that way about somebody, what would you do?
I know.
Not hang out with them.
Yeah. It's funny. We were hanging out with Ryan's aunt and uncle, whom I love so deeply. And they're very Mormon. They're like,
mm-hmm.
you know, super Mormon. But they have no qualms with who I am as a person. And it has always been so surprising to me. Because, I mean, Aunt Judy, she grew up in the hood in Highland Park when Highland Park was Highland Park. And she had mommy issues up the wazoo too. She had a disjointed family, and so when she grew up, she was like, I'm doing things differently for my kids mm-hmm. and the people around me
mm-hmm.
and as a result she can have a niece-in-law who runs her mouth, who has to take an edible in her house, who drinks in her house mm-hmm. she doesn't care, and she loves me regardless mm-hmm. And not even regardless, she just loves me because she sees my humanity and that I'm trying mm-hmm. to be a decent human being, that I love her nephew so well. And that we're
it's interesting. There's like a lot of people who's like, it's like for them, their religion is actually just kind of cultural.
Yes.
It's not actually a part of like how they navigate relationship as mm-hmm. much as it is a way of organizing their community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then like they don't see... This is like, well, what's wrong with me? I'm just going to church.
I know.
Like, well,
yeah. Well, there's a lot wrong with you, baby girl.
Yeah. Let me count the ways.
Let me count the ways. I know. Sorry, my mom is so jealous. It's okay. A lot of my family is so jealous of the relationships I have with different people. Like my best friend Leanna is my soulmate, my ride mm-hmm. or die, mm-hmm. and my mom will always bring her up, like you and Leanna, and I was like. Well, we're completely devoted to each other, and mm-hmm. Not to say that we don't fight. We fight all the time,
mm-hmm.
but we can chat about it, and we can come. We have decided to love each other and to be family, mm-hmm. and our families forget that they have to do that as well. You have to decide to be my family.
Yeah, you have to decide to, like, how are we going to learn to resolve conflict here?
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to learn how to be sweet to each other and repair this thing? And also, how are we going to remember that, like, you know, that this is a two-way street?
Mm-hmm.
And also to remember what is actually important. It's just okay. It's like, why? I mean, my best friend in the whole world is Miles Markham, and we lived together at one point. And when I tell you, we're not great roommates together. And by that I mean I am ADHD.
Mm.
Messy girl. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to be messy. I just am.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. I don't even put... Thing is, I've taken all of the negativity out of that word. I'm just like, messy, cluttered.
I'm messy. I don't care.
Like, to me now, I'm like... Sometimes it gets to a non-functional point and I have to put on my big girl panties and like, just for example, today I had to do the dishes because it was getting untenable and unlivable.
Yeah.
I didn't have any shame about it though.
And you shouldn't.
Yeah. But Miles is the polar opposite.
Oh God.
Like I'm talking Miles. Yeah. And so it was difficult for us to live together. And also because of, you know, Miles's shit and the way that, you know, they were raised. And I'm over here like someone who has open communication. You tell me to my face what goes on. Miles doesn't do that. Left doing little passive aggressive things here and there, thinking I'm going to get it. Mm-mm. Same thing with my other roommate, John. He was doing a bunch of passive aggressive things, didn't get it. And then ambushed me on the day that my boyfriend at the time moved to town to say, hey, we don't want to live together anymore. And that just, and so like, we had to like, you know, talk through, I'm like, I don't have a problem with you not wanting to live with me. I have a problem with you not telling me that you have a problem. Mm-hmm. Like if I've done something to offend you and it's boiling up and you can't tell me why, like, that's this is like, it's not my fault. I couldn't change because you didn't tell me.
Love me enough to tell me. That's what I tell Ryan all the time.
That's the fucking thing. It's just like, love me enough to tell me if I've hurt your feelings. Mm-hmm. Something I love, I've got actually like, I'll call like they're technically like the moderators on my Discord channel. Mm-hmm. But they're also the people that I trust that if I've gone too far, that they're going to tell me.
Yeah.
And or if I need like a really clear take on people who are not a part of the blogosphere, influencer sphere, people who are just like regular ass people. Mm-hmm. There's like, this is how I perceive it. Like, they'll tell me. Mm-hmm. Like, why is it that you can tell me, but.
Yep.
So now I'm a person who keeps no secrets.
Yeah, I can't. Maybe I feel like I changed a lot after my disability really went haywire, but mm-hmm. I don't have the energy. I don't have the emotional capacity. It hurts my body.
Bit.
I can't.
Makes me tired.
Yep. The embodiment has been very real ever since. The pain has reached an exponential point, and I see it as a huge blessing. I know that's a weird thing to say for some people that like my chronic pain, but it is. I feel so much freer. I'm like, get out of my house. It's 9 o'clock and I want to go to bed. And my friends don't care because they love me and they're like, yeah, that's okay. See you later.
Yeah. It's the clarity of those boundaries, period. Mm-hmm. Like that's because within a container, magic can be worked. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is if your container is too small, that's why it's, you know, it feels cramped.
Yep.
And so, the thing is like, I think we go out into wide open spaces. I think that is what I'm understanding a lot is that containers are meant to shift also over time. Mm-hmm. So like it might feel really good to be in a progressive church for a while. And then like for me, I was a part of a really dope ass progressive church here in Atlanta. And then it just got to a point where like, this isn't doing it for me. Like I'm not actually getting what I need to out of this. This is feeling tiresome.
Yeah.
And if it's not, you know, if it's not something I actively want to spend my energy on, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. But something Rumi says in a poem is just like your greatest presence is in every single contraction and expansion, the two as beautifully poised as bird wings. Mm. And so like, I kind of think about it like that. That's how it is. Like sometimes you come into containers, sometimes your practice looks a very specific way for a specific time and then it changes, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes seasonally. And I think like,
yeah,
that is one of the gifts of like, the church seasons in some ways. And then like, you know, if you overlay that with the wheel of the year, the pagan wheel of the year, you get real spicy.
Oh yeah. I'm very much into this. It's funny because I've always considered myself to be very intellectual. I used to read so much. And in this season of my life, I don't have time for apologetics. I don't have time to study theology to argue with you. All I care about is love and light, baby. Like all else is inconsequential to me. And that is my theology is love and light. I just don't care right now.
I don't think you should. like I really think that it was trying to come up with a theology. A Course in Miracles says. Mm-hmm. I fucking love that book.
I also love that you memorize all this stuff, by the way. It is.
I don't mean to. It's just.
But I love it. It's so
it's one of those things where it's like, I've got one of those things where like, if I've read it once, I probably have it. If I read it a couple times, I definitely have it.
Yeah.
But it says, While a universal theology is impossible, a universal experience is not only possible, but necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really it. I'm just like, religion, don't want to argue about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only, I don't care. I don't care to argue whether Jesus was really crucified or my Muslim friend says that God took Jesus up into heaven and transfigured one of his disciples who died in his place. I don't care.
Nope.
You know, okay. I don't, because at the end of the day, my question is just like, what am I doing or how am I going to experience peace?
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to experience love? How am I going to take care of the soft animal of my body? How am I going to take care of the people I love?
Mm-hmm.
And your spirituality should be in service of that, in my opinion.
Yep. Yep. I agree. And I feel like when I talk about this kind of stuff with certain people, they're just like, oh, well, you just want your life to be easy with no responsibilities. And I'm very much like, I take more responsibility than I feel like a lot of people would.
Boom.
Like when my friend was manic and clinically insane, I took care of her because I understood her and everybody left her. And I physically shouldn't have had the capacity, but I did have the capacity because divinity granted me that capacity.
Yes.
And or like my this is a more relaxed example, friends, sorry about that heaviness, but you're my good. Friend, his family is like giving him so much shit about his graduation party. My friend is disabled, he has CP, he's adopted, he has gone through so much in his life, and now he graduated with his master's to be a therapist. And to me, this is the an achievement that is not only worth celebrating, but I have to celebrate you. I have to make sure that you feel like that, you know, that what you accomplished is monumental, not just to him, but to everybody in his life. And his family was giving him shit about just planning a party. And I was like, you know what, George, I'm over it. I'm just going to do it. Fuck it. I'm doing it. I don't care. I'll take care of the party and your family can fight me later. I don't care. We're not doing this. Yeah. So yeah, I just feel like I have more capacity being this type of person than what other people would expect.
What I think is just really funny is like, what I see is just like, this type of person, you mean somebody who's just honest?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I don't get. And maybe this is something the way that you and I are built.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about this in the book, and this is something I teach a lot of people, but like this idea of radical honesty, which I sum up in one sentence, which is tell the truth to everyone about everything all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear that problem, and I hear that to me, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no problem. And everybody was like, well, you couldn't do that. Because if you did, there could be consequences. I'm just like, and what?
And?
What's better, to lie?
Yep.
You want to lie about it? To, I mean, like, I understand. Sure, in cases of safety, sure.
Yeah.
But also, like, use your sense, people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean.
Yep.
I'm not talking about extreme situations, or I'm not talking about what if. Stop trying to what if and listen to the heart of that.
Yep.
And the thing is, you can do that.
Yep.
And how I practice that is threefold. One, I know that I can say what I'm feeling because I'm responsible for how I feel at the end of the day. And this is not to say that I don't need other people or want other people or other people can't be a part of that, but just saying that I am ultimately responsible.
Yep.
And also part of that responsibility is expressing them to someone. So I can always say how I'm feeling if I know that I can take care of myself. And I know I can take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think I want to change it to that.
Yeah.
Because I know I can take care of myself. That's even better. Ooh, cool.
Mm.
Two, I can always name what I need because I know I'm responsible for getting my needs met.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I know I can do it.
Yeah.
And the third one is I can always ask for what I want if I'm always okay with hearing no.
Yep. That's the ticket. People can't hear no. And you could tell me no, that's fine.
Yeah. And the thing is, if I hear no and it fucks me up, that's data. I'm just like, oh, I'm really attached here.
Mm-hmm.
I really want this specific thing. And that's not a bad thing to want something, but you got to learn what to do with that disappointment.
Yep.
What are you going to do when someone doesn't do what you want?
Mm-hmm.
Are you still going to love them? You still going to treat them right? You still going to be their kin?
Yep.
For some people, the answer is no. If I can't get what I want in this situation, then something has to change. And I think that, you know, like, this is where, you know, this is where conversations of boundaries come into play. But like, but it's, you know, like, I think that's also part of building boundaries is truth telling in this way. Mm-hmm. And I don't even call it truth telling. I just think like it's easier to me. I'm like, I am completely unburdened. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and the reason I will advocate it for everyone is just because when it is actually applied to your relationships, people get free.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You want to let, you want to get over that anxiety about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 things. There is a path for it, baby.
Yep. This reminds me of when I wrote an essay about people leaving in the hard times and I posted it on my Instagram and I lost friends over it because they,
what? I'm sorry. I shouldn't laugh at that. That's like,
I mean, it's really funny.
I was like, I'm gonna write about the loss I'm feeling, and then I will then proceed to lose everybody.
Yeah.
What the fuck is wrong with people?
I mean, they felt called out, and I think they were like, oh, everybody is gonna know who this is about, and I was like, well, this is about literally everybody because everybody left my friend when she was in crisis, and as a result, I felt left as well. But I do like, so these friends didn't want to talk to me about it, and they just unfollowed me on Instagram as if that's not like a huge thing.
Sounds like they felt guilty about something, and just was like, I'm not guilting you. Yeah. I'm telling you about my experience. If you feel guilty, that's between you and God, bitch.
That's where I kind of landed, because at first I was so distraught because they're like my best friends, and I was like, I don't understand. Da, da, da. And then all of these other friends who loved me more, in my opinion, they were like, Josie, we're glad because they weren't treating you very well.
Period.
And I don't think, they were just in a different stage of life, and I get it. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to drop me because of an essay that I wrote that you felt called out on, wow. I mean,
I had the same, like, I had someone who I thought was a very close friend. I wrote about when my church disallowed me from being a Bible study leader because I was queer, even though I asked them if I could, and they said yes, and then they said nope. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? And everyone's like, everybody's gonna know it's about me, and I was just like, that sucks.
Yeah. And also
I'm just like, and it's also just like but also like I'm thinking I'm just like, but is it untrue?
Exactly.
And that's the thing. It's just like, at least from where I'm sitting, if someone came to me with this level of feedback, and my response is, how dare you? Rather than saying, hey, is this about me? Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm sorry. Again, people don't have like a framework for repair. They just have a framework for like, I don't know, that the fake niceness. We all have to play nice. We all have to like put on a facade and pretend like somebody else's grief isn't real. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to deal with it, that's fine. That's your prerogative. And that's, but like, as for me in my house, I just think that's a little subpar.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I just ended up it took me a long time to accept it, even though I'm a bad bitch. We struggle too, friends. We struggle.
Yes. Because like, too. We also like, you know, I think Enneagram 8s, like we also fight hard. Like, because you're also a Scorpio. Yeah, too.
No, God, I'm a triple Leo.
Of course you are. There we go.
I feel a little Scorpio though.
Yeah. I think it's just like, we want to win, and we want, not even just we want to win, but it's like, that's the wrong word. It's, we want, you know,
we want to reach the ideal.
Yeah. And I don't, it's just like, just because like, I don't know. I don't know if like, this is like how it felt with you, but just like, again, the further or the closer you are to the mythical norm, and the closer you are to like the privileges of the world, the more likely you are unable to receive critical feedback or like,
yeah.
And usually like, that's how like a lot of my close friendships, they fall along those lines. Mm-hmm. Like I've got like my peripheral people, like, you know, the girl is, you know, I go out and go drinking. I see the girls, we're having a good time. But the people who are actually close to me, you know, it's like critical analysis or bust, man.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't have time. I really don't.
Yep. Yeah, like my best friend, I remember because she was friends with these people too. And what a lot of people around us ended up saying is like, Josie, they have a different definition of friendship than you. And there's nothing we can do about it. And I was like, you're right. You're right.
Their definition sucks.
I mean, I agree. Because they have family and they were white. So, I mean, I understand there's a difference in culture or whatever. But like my best friend is also white and she has been able to adjust and learn.
You know, some people get it.
Yeah.
It's like it's an issue of the girls that get it, and the girls that don't. And it's just that's how it is.
Yep.
And I hate that. I don't want that to be the case. I want, you know, I believe that Christ desires all shall be saved. Mm-hmm. All to be saved. Something like that.
Yeah. And it ended up being a blessing. I mean, because I can have more time to focus on relationships and friendships that are willing to meet me halfway and are willing to have those difficult conversations with me and who are willing to know me in my fullness, in my grief, in my honesty. I mean, my honesty has gotten me in a lot of trouble with a lot of people, but at the end of the day, I have had a great, great time about it.
I don't... In trouble. Just said another way, I said what I actually thought and it pissed people off. Like, that's the thing. When you're no longer afraid of getting in trouble, I think that's when you know that you've reached a really great point in your expansion.
Yeah.
Is like, I can say anything. And, you know, like, I know, like, I can say anything. And it's one of those things where just, like, it's not a license to just, like, be a dick or whatever. But, like, I know that I can speak the truth about myself. And if that does not, if people don't like it, like, that sucks for them.
Yeah.
That's always where I put them. Like, that sucks for you. Like, because, like, I'm a delight.
And
I really
feel like
am.
People confuse being honest. Again, with being a dick, and I'm like, no, I'm not gonna say the first thing that pops into my head. I'm not.
Oh, I never
asshole.
Do that.
But if you're bothering me, I'm gonna tell you why you're bothering me.
And I don't like that. Seems to me like clear communication, and people are just like, oh my god, it's like, because again, in polite society, quote unquote polite, like especially like, it's like, like in youth group, for example, you had to hang out with everybody. You had to be friends with everybody, even if they did not jive with you. You know, in church, you had to be nice, make nice with everybody, even if these people don't jive with you. And we've taken that same thing into the rest of the world. I'm just like, no. No. I'm just like, listen, just like, we're all in it for liberation. It does not mean I have to be buddy-buddy with you.
Nope.
You know, and I'm like, it's like, and granted, like, I'm down to hang out with most people.
Yeah.
But like, I'm also clear by my boundaries. There was a guy at the bar a couple weeks ago who was acting in very inappropriate ways, like just saying some things that made me really uncomfortable. So I said, hey, I just want to tell you, you've made me really uncomfortable and I no longer want to talk to you. So if you would please leave me alone, that would be great. And when I tell you, he just started freaking out and started to apologize. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean anything by it. I was like, I understand. Thank you for saying that, but I still do not want to talk to you. So please leave me alone. Mm-hmm. And I had to like do this really good. And then eventually I had to stand up and say like, walk outside and leave me the fuck alone or I will get security. And it's just like, because like people, and like he really wanted me in that moment to absolve him, to say it was okay, to say that like his behavior was like acceptable when it was not. And I'm like, no, I'm not here to placate you anymore.
Yep.
And it's not, it doesn't come from a place of I hate you. It comes from a place of I love you and want the best for you. And I will fuck you up if you get any closer. And I want the best for me and I love me.
Yeah, that's the part that people don't understand, is that we're protecting ourselves and they don't want us to.
Yeah.
They don't want us to consider ourselves and our comfortability.
That's really it. Like people like, was it Jesus, others, you? That's what joy is. Right. J-O-Y, Jesus, others than you. Like I, again, of being a mystic, when Jesus says love your neighbor as yourself, the way I actually interpret that is like love your neighbor as an extension of yourself.
Yep.
Like when you're loving them, you're loving yourself, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not loving yourself, you're not loving your neighbor.
I agree.
If you're if you're living beyond your means, if you're doing more than you have the capacity for, you're not being a neighbor. But if you have the capacity, you should give.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the capacity and someone still needs to like find somebody, something, there's enough. Ugh.
It's enough to go around.
We could. I have a dream. I like current things I'm thinking about. This is a mild departure. And I also know that we're like coming up on time. I want to start like a spiritual but not religious community.
Hell yeah.
That meets regularly and maybe does ritual and have like a reading and maybe someone talks and then maybe we share a meal.
Mm.
And someone says, Kevin, that sounds awful lot like a church. And I'm just like, not a fucking church. Mm-hmm. We don't do that.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to call it that, I guess whatever. I don't care.
Yeah.
We're not calling it. But it's like I want it to meet in a bar. I want there to be pancakes.
Oh,
pancakes. Like, and the thing is just like, that's really the main event. It's like, we come together, we drink some coffee, we eat some pancakes, we connect with one another. We figure out where the needs are. We figure out like where the opportunities for friendship are and connection.
Mm-hmm.
We do cool weird spiritual shit.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it's like a time of focus on meditation and like, you know, the work of the soul, because I think that's important. And it's also a time of connection.
Yeah, because I feel like church spaces haven't been really interested in our souls for a long time.
That's really, we did not learn how to have a relationship with God in mm-hmm. church. I went to seminary and they did not teach me about having a relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
I had to leave the church, wander around, learn about how other people saw God to realize like that it was always within me.
Yep.
Ugh. And then the thing is just like it's making people aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's really what the work of I've been reading Bishop Carlton Peterson, God rest his soul, The Gospel of Inclusion. He's like, the rule that can enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
You're free to be whatever you want to be, whoever you are. That's what we're in the work of doing. Oh.
Amen. I mean, I feel like this was a great conversation for people to understand what is in this book.
And yeah.
Like, I mean, this is all you're going to get. This is what you're going to get in this book.
Yeah. Like, and I really think like deadass, like it, I kind of write, I'm told that I write how I talk. And so there's even like points in the book where like, I've had like the computer reading it back to me just to like, you know, when I'm getting ready to teach about it, I can hear it. But like there's certain isms in there that if you know it's me, it's like, oh, I can read this in Kevin's voice.
Mm-hmm.
But the computer doesn't get the timing right at all. And it sounds so stupid. If you're just like, some people aren't going to get that, but
yeah. That's okay. All right. Oh my gosh.
But
tell the folks where they can pre-order. You can pre-order your book.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. You can pre-order my book at thekevingarcia.com/bloom. You can, I would say order it from the indie link, mm-hmm. please. Although I'm contractually obligated to put the other two links on my website. You can also, I'm putting a link up soon where you can order an autographed version or autographed book directly from me. Mm. It will be like a touch more expensive because of how postage works and it's me. So I can't give you like the huge discounts that like the Glamazon does. So if you want to support me directly, you can order it directly from me. And I'm really excited about that. But those pre-orders are going to be due by the 16th of December. So like 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find my podcast, A Tiny Revolution, all over the place. And my handle is at the Kevin Garcia.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for your love and light, Kevin.
This was so much fun and easy.
I mean, like, that's the best podcast when they're easy, right?
Yeah. Plus, like, you and me, it's just like we get to be just goobies together.
I know. I agree.
That's what people don't understand. It's just like we're serious, but we're just really goobies.
Yeah. We're fun bitches. We're mostly fun.
Listen, let's start our own retreat called Fun Bitches Anonymous.
I've thought about, like, maybe we should do this together, where, like, classes on how to be a bad bitch. Like, how do you get to be this?
Like, how do you, like, how do you stop giving a fuck about what you shouldn't be giving a fuck about?
Exactly.
Oh, how to ration your fucks.
Rational.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I really think that would be a really fun, like, we'll call it the anti-class, the anti-workshop.
For real. I love it.
I mean, it's really a time for us to come together, be silly, but also, like, we've got some good advice.
Yeah. I agree.
All right. Well, come to our next workshop, everybody.
Yeah.
Sign up for our class.
Follow Kevin. Kevin does a lot of great stuff. So you're going to want to be in the know.
Yeah. The book's coming out January 9. I've got another cohort called the Spiritual Recovery Cohort coming up at the top of the year. I do one-to-one coaching with folks on creating spiritual practices and overcoming the trauma TM. Mm-hmm. And that's it. I love y'all. This is fun.
I love you.
Bye, everyone.
This has been an Irreverent Media podcast.